This podcast is general in nature and hasn't taken your circumstances into account. It's important you consider your personal circumstances and speak to a financial advisor before deciding what's right for you. Any general tax information provided is provided as a guide only. Now, here's Shane and Deanna.
Hi everyone, my name is Mi. I've been part of the economics team here at AMP for about 2.5 years. But this is my first time filling for Deanna because she's away talking about the budget. And today we're going to talk about the budget as well. Hi Shane.
Hi Mi.
So we've had a lot of headlines about the budget in the past 12 hours and everyone's saying that we've had, you know, the second consecutive surplus, the first time in 20 years. Is this a good thing? Can you actually walk us through what is a surplus and why should we care?
Well, I think it's a good thing because a surplus basically means that the government is taking more out of the economy in tax revenue than it's putting back in. Now, if the economy was in recession, you wouldn't want a surplus. You know, the government should be doing the opposite, putting more money into the economy than it takes out. But we had massive deficits through the pandemic, and having a surplus means that you're effectively putting some money aside for a rainy day, paying down some debt. And that ultimately helps give us some flexibility next time the economy turns around for the government to sort of pump more money in. So yes, I think the budget does deserve credit for that surplus. It's partly been brought about by good luck though, because the recovery from the pandemic was a lot faster than the government assumed. So more people got jobs, they pay tax, goes to Canberra. And secondly, the commodity prices, most people think the iron ore price, but coal, gas are all running at levels well above what the government was assuming. Mining companies, gas companies, they earn profits. They pay tax on that and it goes to Canberra. So they're the main drivers of the surplus.
Right. So what are the main takeaways from this budget, in your opinion?
Well, I think there's several. One is right here, right now, we're in a surplus. Might turn out to be even bigger than what they talked about on budget night, the $9.3 billion. Going forward, though, we will go back into deficits. Part of that is because the government is undertaking cost of living relief, which is jargon for doing things like an energy rebate. Every household will get $300 in an energy rebate, rental assistance, lower cost of medicines and so on. Those sorts of things will help lower measured inflation. So that's the second aspect of the budget. First one was budget surplus, but going back into deficit. Second aspect is cost of living relief. The government basically hopes that that will take some pressure off inflation. And I tend to think that it probably will. Because that's the way the ABS measures it. Price of electricity will go down by the equivalent of the $300 rebate that's paid to households. The other aspect of the budget, and this is the big picture vision thing from the current government, is a so-called future made in Australia, where the government wants to, via a series of red tape removal, tax concessions, subsidies, make it easier for foreign investors to invest in Australia in certain industries, providing they contribute, say, towards net zero. And so that's what they call future made in Australia. I think it's consistent with the Prime Minister's aim when he got elected, which was to make more things in Australia. Of course, a lot of economists like myself have question marks about that, but they were the four key things, I think, in this budget.
So cost of living was actually mentioned in the budget paper 70 times. I counted this yesterday.
Wow.
Made in Australia was...
Did you have a machine that measured that?
Yes, there was a machine.
Put that through a machine.
The computer can do anything. Made in Australia was mentioned about a similar amount of times, but then housing was actually mentioned about 246 times.
Wow, that's a big one. Yeah, I didn't realise that was so big.
I mean, we're Australians, we love to talking about the property market and housing.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt housing was a feature in the budget. I sort of thought it wasn't as big, although I hadn't done that word count aspect of it. So that does tell you something about how seriously the government regards housing. The reason I didn't think it was that big was because they said, oh, we're going to put billions towards it, but a lot of it was billions that were already being spent under older programs. That said, I must admit, this government seems to be more serious about addressing the housing problem than many predecessor governments. In the past, the response to the housing crisis was, oh, well, we'll just give out a first homeowner grant or cut stamp duty. And that just puts more money in the hands of the first home buyer. They all do the same thing. They push up the prices and all it does is make baby boomers like me richer and ultimately even tougher for the first home buyers. Whereas this government, I think, has got the thing ran the right way. You've got to boost supply. Of course, they got mugged by letting the immigration numbers in the very short term get too high. And now, of course, they're trying to bring those numbers down, which they will do. don't get me wrong here, I think immigration is fantastic for Australia. In fact, I'm even married to a person who immigrated to Australia when she was a young girl. So that's fantastic for Australia. Just got to get the balance right, make sure there's enough housing for everybody. But yeah, housing is another feature of this budget. But I don't think it was as big as it was in the last budget, where we had that commitment to make 1.2 million new homes over 5 years. I think what the government is now trying to do is bed that down, make sure that they get pretty close to that.
So do you think we'll get there, Shane? 1.2 million houses over 5 years, that's 240,000 per year, and approvals are only running at 150,000.
It looks hopeless right now. It looks completely hopeless. We need to have that amount because in normal times, normal levels of immigration, underlying demand for housing in Australia is about 200,000. But we have a shortfall of at least 200,000. That's a cumulative shortfall of at least 200,000. So, A, you need to build enough homes to keep up with underlying demand, consistent with population growth. So that's at least 200,000 a year. And then you need to do a bit more than that to get the shortfall under control. So that's why I thought 240,000 from the federal government was a good number. But a couple of things that got in the way, immigration levels went crazy when we reopened the borders. That's now starting to come back under control again. And then we had high interest rates, all sorts of things slowing down home building, constraints in the home building industry. And so we're currently, as you say, approvals are running around 150,000. And last year we built 170,000. So it looks kind of hopeless at present. But I'm hopeful that if we can get capacity up in the home building industry, train more tradies, for example, and also I think swing the mix around a little bit. So at the moment we're predominantly building standalone homes. That requires a lot more resources than if we build social or affordable housing or units. And the last time we got close to that 240,000 a year number was about 220,000, 230,000 in the unit building boom that we had around 2015, 2017. So we can do it, but we have to speed up approval processes to develop stuff. We've got to release more land. I think we've got to encourage people to live more in regional Australia. We've got to get more tradies out there. And I think if we set our minds to it and commit more to social and affordable housing, then we'll probably get there. But at the moment, it does look a long way off.
One of the things that tradies tend to complain about in the past 2-3 years is that they don't get enough supplies. They have to wait for supplies from abroad. Because I guess, you know, we don't really have that much manufacturing here in Australia anymore. And the government actually talked a lot about Made in Australia program to try to boost up manufacturing onshore. Do you think that's a good thing? Would that actually help solve the housing shortage issue for Australia?
As an economist, I'm a little bit skeptical. I like to be able to buy made in Australia. I still drive a Holden. I bought one of the last Holdens that was made in 2017, very proudly. But that's my heart. My head says, well, as soon as you start government trying to determine which things we will make in Australia and pick winners, in other words, and then we'll protect them via subsidies of some sort or tax breaks, then I sort of question whether it's going to be sustainable. Because governments often, or even committees, lead towards things that look popular at the time. Like right now, we want to build quantum computing, solar panels, hydrogen fuel systems, batteries. They're all the popular things, but they're not necessarily the best things. And I note, you know, solar panels have collapsed in price. So I think we've got to be very wary about it. Look, there's no doubt that the future Made in Australia incentives will encourage more business investment. So it is going to provide a short-term boost. Whether it turns out to be a long-term saviour for Australia or not is debatable. And we did go through something in the post-war period where we wanted to build white goods, you know, fridges, washing machines and so on, cars, Holdens, Fords, Valiants. Fantastic time. Made our own clothes, textiles, clothing and footwear. But they had to get protected. And ultimately, they always remained infant industries and never were able to stand on their own 2 feet and then collapsed. So it's about getting the balance right here, and I'm just a little bit sceptical that government will be successful in picking the industries which will work. I'd rather see that the market forces do that rather than have the government do it.
Right. But Australia is not the only one doing this, though. Say the US also tried to do this with the Inflation Reduction Act.
Yeah.
How do you think that's going?
Well, it's all in favour now. There's fashion in economics, or not political economics, I think. Economists will always tell you, if you look at high school economics, that tariffs, quotas and subsidies aren't in the interests of consumers because they distort the market and they're not, they don't result in optimal use of resources, and they result in higher prices or costs to the taxpayer. So that's what high school economics would teach you. But there's been a backlash against globalization. A lot of people blame other countries for their life turning out differently to what they expected. And so consequently, now the political pendulum has swung back towards more intervention, more protection, more nationalism. So China subsidizes some of its industries. America thinks, well, we got to do that. Europeans do the same thing. And of course, there's little old Australia trying to do exactly the same stuff as well. In fact, you know, I've seen a picture of someone meeting President Biden. There's a sign, a future made in America. Yeah, they're doing it. Now we're doing the same thing with the same wording. I kind of think, well, if America wants to subsidize the production of widgets and then sell it to us at a cheaper price than we can otherwise do it, then we should take it from them.
That's true.
And we should do things that we have a comparative advantage in. And then you might think, well, what do we produce exactly? Well, there are examples of stuff we produce.
Vegemite.
Vegemite. Vegemite is a very good one. We produce a lot of processed food in Australia. We produce good quality leisure boats. Riviera, Maritimo spring to mind on that front. And the other thing is, well, people say, well, you know, we're not using our unemployed people. Well, unemployment has never been as low. It's been around levels last seen in the last 40 years. Yep. So it's not as if we've got lots of unemployed people out there. So I kind of think that, yeah, I want to buy made in Australia stuff. We do make good stuff in Australia, but I just worry that if the taxpayer has got to fit the bill for it, then it could work against us in the long term.
That's true. I think optically it looks good. It sounds good, you know, patriotism, nationalistic kind of policies like that. But I guess in the longer term kind of impact, it's not necessarily good because it's quite inflationary. We might produce them like at higher prices that other countries can do it. Speaking of inflation, we've had quite a few measures in this budget to kind of lower it. Say, for example, the energy bill relief, which would definitely lower measured inflation in the third quarter, as you mentioned before. But isn't this just kind of kicking down the can for next year if they don't have the relief anymore?
Well, that's a good question, actually. Most people just say, well, yeah, will the energy bill relief work in lowering inflation? And then the response is, well, it might, but there's all this stimulus going in, which might pump the economy up. That seems to be the big concern of economists. But there is that other concern there that you allude to, that if you don't keep doing it every year, then when the subsidy ends and the price goes back up again and you've just kicked the can down the road, that is a risk. And what this all depends on, I think, is getting the underlying prices down. So if you take electricity, it went way up. We put an energy bill relief in there, which holds it down. We're now seeing wholesale electricity prices come down. In fact, you produce a graph on that every week that I love. It's coming down, but it's still above where the subsidised price is. So you've got to keep the subsidies going for a bit. But the hope is that if we manage to get the wholesale price coming down, then eventually you won't need the subsidy. But I admit that is a risk, that we may find ourselves locked into a situation where you've got to keep doing this. And that's why you've got to be a little bit sceptical here. On the one hand, I think the government does have a point. You can do a few subsidies out there or energy bill relief, whatever you want to call them. But you can't keep doing that forever. Otherwise, you'll blow the budget. So ultimately, you've got to get the inflation rate down. And yeah, we're confident that as growth slows or remains subdued, that inflation will come down. But it's certainly a risk. In fact, out of interest, the government's forecast was similar to our own. So we're just staying where we are.
Yeah. I think another concern with that is that even if you lower measured inflation in kind of outliers, say gas or electricity, the trimmed mean measure wouldn't really be affected by it.
That's true.
And arguably, that kind of longer-term trend inflation, trimmed mean underlying inflation, is more appropriate to be considered by the RBA for their policy settings as well.
Yeah, the RBA will look through it to some degree because oftentimes electricity rents, the movements there have been so extreme that they're not included in the trim mean. They get stripped out as being extremely volatile. So ultimately it will be the trim mean that determines things. But interestingly, the RBA revised up its headline inflation numbers more than its trim mean. So the government's efforts, and by the way, trim mean is designed, if anyone is wondering what it is, trim mean is a statistical measure which is designed to give you a sort of a guide to the underlying trend in inflation, over and above things like electricity prices and petrol prices and so on that bounce around a lot. So ultimately, if the trim mean still keeps coming down, then that will enable the Reserve Bank to ease There is an element, though, where if you get your headline rate down, which is what the RBI, the government's trying to do, then it reduces the flow-on effect. Say if you take urban transport fares, they're indexed to the rate of inflation. So if your headline rate of inflation is, say, 3.5 rather than 4, there's less of an increase in all those items in the CPI that are indexed to the prior inflation rate. You can also get inflation expectations down by getting the headline rate down. So there is some logic to what the government is doing here, but it's one of those ones that divides economists. Some say, okay, this will work. Tick, maybe we'll get a rate cut at year end. I guess we're leaning in that direction. Others say, well, it's all disastrous because they're just pumping more money into the economy and that's what ultimately counts, and that will just mean maybe the Reserve Bank's got to raise rates. We think that's a risk, but we lean to the former view that it probably will help get inflation down.
So just to wrap it up, what are the three things, if we forget about everything, what will you tell everyone today?
Well, the first one would be that our budget is in a lot better shape than many feared. You know, we are in surplus in the second year in a row. The second point is that cost of living relief, I think, will help to some degree in lowering inflation. The third point, though, is that this government is undertaking a lot of spending, and that does add to the size of government. There are question marks around future made in Australia. But overall, it's sort of an okay budget. I sort of gave it an okay rating. Just one final point, though, I know I'm on to the fourth point, is that when I was thinking of what song is appropriate to this budget, I was thinking of a 1970s group called Hot Chocolate, Everyone's a Winner, because it seemed like everyone in this budget was a winner, unless you're a dodgy NDIS provider or maybe a university. So it looks very much like almost an election budget in some ways, because there are so many goodies in there for virtually everyone. Like every household gets $300 rebate off their electricity bill.
That is true.
Anyway, that's a wrap. Thanks, mate.
Thank you, Shane, for having me.
My pleasure. See you, everyone.
For more info on Shane and Deanna's podcasts and reports, head to the Insights Hub at amp.com.au.